Well, you know, I tried to recruit LeBron as a football player.
You may be out talented, but you cannot be outworked.
We never lost to Michigan when he was on the sideline.
That's right.
He was undefeated. So I was a Cav before you were.
If Ron Harper had stayed on that team, they would have beat Jordan.
Just don't call me what the fans used to call me.
Very important piece of my life.
I didn't get to point out the bobbleheads. That's about the height differential, just so you guys know. Hey, teammates. Welcome to another episode of It's All About the Team. And we are so lucky today to have one of the greatest Cleveland Cavaliers and Notre Dame Fighting Irish basketball players of all time. Welcome to Austin Carr.
Cleveland draft, Austin Carr.
Thank you, Coach. How you doing? You mind if I call you Coach?
You know what? Just don't call me what the fans used to call me. Okay. After okay. A tough loss.
Yeah, but as a player, as an ex-player, I have to give you that respect.
Thank you. Now, to me, that's the greatest moniker there is in the world.
Yes.
And so I like it when you're called Coach. All right. So we're so lucky to have you here for this episode. Mm-hmm. We're filming this episode on the same day as we're having a fundraiser for the Youngstown State University men's basketball team. We call it the Sixth Man Club. And we're here at Trumbull Industries, and we're going to be having our event right after we're done here at what's called Sam's Club. Mm-hmm. And Sam's Club, for the people in this part of the world, is known for having great wine. Mm-hmm. So this is the first time on the It's All About the Team podcast that we've ever had some fine wine here.
Oh,
and I'm not used to this good of wine, so I probably won't finish it now. But it's so exciting to have you here, and we have
here
a couple props. Mm-hmm. But before I get into my props, I want to ask you about our 2024-25 Cleveland Cavaliers. And at the time we're filming,
yeah, it is.
We're what, 14-0,
15-0,
15, yeah, and getting ready to play the Celtics,
right?
And we'll probably have this episode go live in the first week of December, so who knows what it'll
right,
be like.
Exactly.
But tell me why you think thus far this is the kind of team that it appears to be.
Well, I think a few things have happened that I never thought would change the team focus. Is that and before we talked about, you mentioned, not that the past was bad.
No.
Because we went two rounds into the playoffs in those years that he was there, but their focus is different. I mean, in other words, instead of thinking about your miscomings or what you can't do, it's like, no, we don't even think about those. It's about what you can do.
Right.
And what we would like to do.
Yep.
So that changed them completely right there.
Yep.
So now, guys that maybe close to maybe not having quite all of that, now they feel like, well, I do have that.
Yeah.
And it's amazing how just that little bit of thinking has changed the way the team, like we talked before, their body language is different. Mm-hmm. They look different. They feel different. And I go back to, I have to give management a little credit, because maybe a lot of credit, because we went through a stretch last season where we were 18-2 in one stretch, in the 20-game stretch.
Okay.
And what I think happened is they said, okay, let's go back over the years, as you always do, and let's see what part of the year, and let's see if we can duplicate the best part we were.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's where it stemmed from. They went out and they were found a disciple of Curry, mm-hmm, of Golden State.
Yep.
And incorporated some of that into what we already have, and they've empowered people. See, I really like the fact that they've empowered everybody on the team, and they play 11, 12 guys
I know,
on a nightly. And you know what that does to a locker room.
You bet.
Man, it's like, whew. We all got a piece of this.
Right.
You know,
ownership.
Yes. And that is what makes a guy, instead of maybe not having shooting another 50 shots to shooting his free throws, he'll go ahead and take those 50 now and won't even think about it.
Right.
You know, because of the competitive edge. And so it's a lot of good things are happening. I'm just hoping that it continues.
Right.
And this is about the time of the year when you really, as most conventional thinking, people think that your first 20 games is about who you're going to be. You're going to be close to who you're going to be there. And we're right there now, and got a big one coming up with the Celtics. And we always have played them well, especially in Boston. Now, it's going to be interesting because they are the king of the hill, and they're going to be waiting for us.
Right.
And here we are coming in, you know, undefeated, and it's going to be great. It's going to be a nice game, I think.
You know, you bring up timing.
Yes.
I know as a coach, when we got to Ohio State had a couple subpar seasons. And the guys were tired of suffering.
Yes.
And so here, coach comes in, and they had a couple disappointments. They did a good job, and they were better than 85% of the teams in the NBA.
Right.
But they were still disappointed.
Right.
And so you can't manufacture disappointment and passion and suffering.
That's right.
And so hopefully here in this next segment, we'll stay healthy in both body and mind.
Yes. Yeah, that's important.
Right.
And it's amazing, though, Coach, how people don't understand how important the mental aspect of the game is and what that's all about.
Yep.
And you're right. That has to flow with the physical part.
Right.
Has to.
You know, I've had teams that thought they arrived before the journey was over.
Yes, that's right.
And the journey's hard, especially when you get to the top echelon.
Right.
And so think back. So how many years have you covered the Cavs? We'll get to your playing career in
27.
A little bit.
27.
Right. So 2016 team that won the NBA, right?
Right.
Tell me why you think they were such a good team.
Well, LeBron had a lot to do with all of that. I mean, he has done something that no athlete in any sport would ever do. He took Miami and the Cavaliers to the NBA Finals 8 straight years. That'll never
Amazing.
Be done.
Right.
Never be done again. I mean, and the first Cavaliers team he took through, we lost to San Antonio. We got swept. That was the worst basketball team I had ever experienced in my life. I don't know how he did it.
Wow.
It was a miracle.
Yep.
But that's how strong he is. He's a very cerebral person
yes.
when it comes to the game. He knows basketball and athletics like he was born with it, you know, which he was. But so you know, I'm thinking that was I kind of lost track here.
Well,
I
tried to recruit LeBron.
Yes.
As a football player. He was a good wide receiver.
Yeah, that's what I wanted to ask you about.
Yeah, he was at St.
What kind of football player was he?
He was a beast.
Oh,
I
man.
Mean, all you had to do was throw it up there, and he could fly.
Yeah, right.
And he was tough.
Right.
He had everything. And I tried to convince him one day. I'll never forget. I was sitting in the office in a chair like this at St. V. The athletic director was sitting right there, and he was the head coach. And I felt this pair of hands on my shoulders. And I'd never felt a pair of hands that big on my shoulder. And I looked up, and it was LeBron.
Oh, okay.
And I said, LeBron, you're the guy I came to see. I think you should come and play 1 year of football.
Right, right.
And 1 year of basketball. Coach O'Brien was our coach back then.
Right, okay.
And then go ahead on to the NBA.
Right, right, yeah.
And I'll never forget, he's got that smile, and he still has a smile.
Right, he still does. Right.
I don't think so, Coach. So I did my best. I went in, but no, he's a special guy and great leader.
Yes.
All good teams have a great leader.
Yep.
A great leader who will work harder than the rest of them.
Right.
Right?
Right.
And the rest of them have to work hard.
That's right.
Right,
right. Right. That's right. That to me is what I think a lot of people take for granted when it comes to the great players. The great players work harder than the average players.
Right.
And people don't see that because all they see is the performance.
The highlights.
Highlights, you know, and all that. And You know, speaking of LeBron, he loved Ohio State.
Oh, he was good to us.
I mean,
he would come in and our guys would drop over.
We would have, I think the game, it was a Michigan game, we were going somewhere to play. They changed all of our arrangements and so we could come back on the way to somewhere else to see the Ohio State Michigan game.
Yep.
And that was great. I mean,
was on the sideline,
yes,
that made it so special for our kids.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, they said, we must be important.
Yes.
If LeBron's
right,
here.
Right.
And we better not lose.
That's right.
we never lost to Michigan when he was on the sideline.
No, that's right.
He was undefeated.
Yeah.
He was. So we think this is going to be a good team, 24-25. We'll see.
Mm-hmm. Right.
16 was really good. Think of another team that maybe even produced better than they were, but because they were a team.
Right, that's Doherty's.
Okay,
Doherty,
what year was that?
Price.
Okay.
That was, had to be 80, 90, early 90s maybe. But it was Doherty, Price, Nance, Ron Harper. And I forget who the forward was.
Elo.
And Elo was in there.
Was Elo in there?
Elo was in there.
Yeah.
But Elo came off the bench. It was okay. But anyway, that team, if Ron Harper had stayed on that team, they would have beat Jordan's team because they were the only team that could handle Chicago at that time. Mm-hmm. They had already beat them 6 out of 7 times. And But Jordan hit that shot, man.
Yeah. I mean, but they to me weren't crazy athletic.
No.
So what
it was
made
a team.
Them? What made them such a good
First
team?
First of all, they liked each other.
Okay.
So that has a lot to do with it.
Yeah.
That gives you the glue.
Yep.
The fact that they like each other, and they were all understanding. They were smart people. They understood. They only did what they do best. None of them really tried to do anything that wasn't something that they were good at.
Right.
To the letter.
Yep.
They
were willing to play their role.
Yes. Because they had the small forward on that team. I forget his name now. But he wasn't very athletic.
Hmm.
He's a good shooter, but he was good defensively.
Mm-hmm.
And I never saw him take a shot that he couldn't make. I mean, if he only shot those shots, I mean, if he had a shot that was not his, he would pass it. And that's the kind of team they had. And they were tough, man.
Yep.
And you know, Price was a dog. Larry Nance. Oh man, he could. It's funny. Brad always tells me. He says Larry blocked all the shots. He says I couldn't jump. He said, but Larry was the one that blocked the shot. But they were a great team, coached by Lenny Wilkins and.
Yep. So how about the team, the Miracle at Richfield?
Oh, well, that was the best basketball team I ever played on.
Okay.
I mean.
Is that Bingo and?
Bingo, Campy, Jones, Dick Snyder, Jim Clemens, Howe State.
Youngstown State coach, too.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, and he and I was one of the best backcourt guys I ever played with.
Yeah.
Jimmy was solid, man.
And he was serious.
Oh yeah. Oh, no smiles.
Ooh.
I've never seen him smile, but especially before a game, he would never smile. I don't care if it was the funniest joke in the world, he would not laugh.
Well, Clem, when he was our coach at Youngstown State, I was the football coach and the athletic director.
Okay.
And every once in a while, I go, "Hey, Clem, smile just a couple times because I think these guys are petrified."
You're right.
You know? So one day we were on the practice field. It was in, I don't know, 88 or 9.
Mm-hmm.
We had a little grass practice field. We were down there. We were doing a little scrimmage, and I saw Coach Clem standing out watching the thing. I think, man, Clem doesn't normally come to practice. And he was just kind of standing. You know how Clem.
Yeah, oh yeah.
And so I thought, well, he doesn't look happy.
Right.
So, and so I walked over to him, and he said, "Coach, I got to talk to you."
Mm-hmm.
He said, and prior to that, he had all these NBA teams wanting him to go coach. But, you know, he said, "I got a job to do here," and so forth. And he said, "I got to talk to you." I said, "What's that?" He said, "Oh, I got a problem." Well, when you're the athletic director,
right,
and your coaches come, you don't like problems.
Right, you don't like
I'm thinking, uh-oh.
Right.
What did one of our guys do or whatever,
right?
So he said, "I got a problem." He said, they want me to go coach the guards at the Bulls. I said, wasn't that where Michael Jordan is like a guard?
Right.
He said, yeah. I said, what's the problem? Go.
Yeah.
He said, well, I don't want to leave you guys. I said, you got a chance to go.
Yeah, right.
Who was that, Phil Jackson probably?
Phil Jackson, right.
I said, you got a chance to go with Phil Jackson.
Right.
And coach the guards with Michael Jordan. Are you kidding me?
Right, right.
And he said, oh, I feel better. I didn't want to let you down. But yeah. That's the way Clem
was. That's how he was.
That's the kind of teammate he was.
He was a true person. And that's why I think we played as well as we did, because we had good people, intelligent people, and we played hard.
Yeah.
Nobody was playing tiptoe through the tulips. Mm-hmm. Everybody was like, grr.
And that was really our first great team.
Yes.
Don't you think?
Yes, you're right.
You know,
and Coach Fitz used to say, you know, because he was a driver, a pusher, a trusher, and we used to get so, excuse the expression, pissed at him. And they used to, the media used to ask him, well, why do you drive them like that? He said, because that gives them one person that they all focus against, and they all become together.
Together, yep.
And that's what his focus was. And that's, he was right, because we didn't think about anything else but how we had to deal with him. And it got to the point where once we started playing better and started having success, he kind of eased off of it, and we almost kind of like, well, wait a minute, you got to get back to who you were. Mm-hmm,
right? So since you mentioned Coach Fitch, mm-hmm. I got to let you in on a little secret. I don't know if I've told you this secret before.
Mm-hmm, no.
But Sam Miller found this warm-up that's National Basketball Association Cavaliers since 1970.
Oh, wow.
So that's legendary. Okay,
you're kidding. Wow.
Here's what you need to know about 1970.
Okay.
I know you're famous because you were, you know, first round draft choice mm-hmm. in 71.
Right.
But in 70, I was the ball boy of the Cleveland Cavaliers.
What?
I was the ball boy.
You were?
So Bill Fitch
right.
and Nick Mulledy
mm-hmm.
came out to Baldwin Wallace, where okay. my dad was the coach and the athletic director.
Okay.
And he said, can we have training camp here? We're starting our franchise.
Right, right.
And my dad, of course,
right.
have this new franchise? Are you kidding me? Absolutely.
Right.
So they get there and they're sitting down and they said, well, look, we don't have anything other than we've got these 12 guys, you know, Luther Rackley, Walt right. Wesley, Gary Suter. Do you remember Gary Suter?
Oh, yeah. I got a story.
Surrey Oliver.
Oh, yeah.
Was Dave Sorensen on that team?
Yes.
Yeah, Dave Sorensen. Yeah. J.J. Johnson.
J.J. Johnson.
Okay. He said, all we got is 12 players
right.
coming to training camp.
Mm-hmm.
And we have the owner, the head coach, and who was the assistant? Lessig?
Lessig.
Lessig.
Right.
He said, that's all we got.
Mm-hmm.
And so they said, we'll come here and train, but we need your athletic trainer to tape the ankles.
Okay.
And he said, sure, you know. Well, that ended up being Ron Culp.
Right.
Who ended up 40 years an athletic trainer in the
right.
NBA, right?
Yes.
No, Cavs and Portland and
right.
Miami,
exactly. right?
right?
Yeah.
So he said, yeah, Ron can do this during training camp.
Right.
And they said, well, we got no one to wash the uniform, the right. practice stuff, and we got no one to roll the balls out. We got no one to run the 24-second clock in right. practice. He said, oh, I got that covered. My son will do it.
Oh, okay.
So I became the first ball boy
Wow.
in training camp with Gary Suter and all those crazy guys.
Yes.
And I ran the 24-second clock. And if you've never run the 24-second clock,
mm-hmm.
sometimes you think it's going up to hit the rim, and you reset it, and you and Bill Fitch would be all over me, you know. But here was my biggest job.
Mm-hmm.
By 8 a.m., I had to have everything washed and everything laid out for the guys and right. so forth, but I had to have two glazed donuts. Because Nick Mulledy wanted two donuts.
Yeah, you're right. Okay.
And if I didn't have Nick Mulledy's two donuts, so I got to do that for 4 or 5 weeks
right.
while they were in training camp.
Right.
And then when they went to the arena and all that, I started football and, you know, right. all that. But I got to go to one exhibition game with them. They played the Buffalo Braves.
Buffalo Braves.
And you know who the guy was that was the first round pick?
Who?
Bob McAdoo.
That's right.
Bob McAdoo.
That's right.
So I got to travel to Buffalo with them. But that was – so I was a Cav before you were. I just want all of you out there that are listening to know that, you know, he may be more famous, but I was
actually
before.
I'm getting the story behind the story now. I never realized all of this.
That's right. No, I tell you what. So then, of course, I followed him like crazy after that. And that's why I remember the miracle at Richfield so much, because I was getting a little older, and now I could drive a car and go to the Richfield. And, you know, I mean, oh, my gosh, that was special.
Those are days.
You know, it was a great thing for our community, you know, and continues to be. And, and, you know, so now let's go back, since I went back to my childhood.
Okay.
Okay, so you come out of D.C.
Right.
Okay, Mackin?
Mackin. Archbishop Mackin.
So who was your coach there?
Paul Furlong.
Tell me what you learned about team from him.
To me, that's where I got most of my understanding of athletics, because Paul was the kind of guy, he was a driver, just like Fitch.
Okay.
And then it seems like I've kind of gravitated to those kind of coaches. And he was a driver, and he was about perfection. And it was work. And he said, never be outworked. You may be out-talented, but you cannot be outworked.
Yep.
And that's how I kind of looked at it. And like you were saying, if you have talent and you have work ethic, put those two together, that's what takes you to that next level.
That's right. But you can't do it without the work.
You got to have the work.
Yep. Viewers, how many of our guests have talked about the importance of work?
Right.
You know, don't let anyone trick you into thinking there's an easy way.
Right. There is no easy way.
There's no shortcuts.
No shortcuts. No.
You know,
nothing's just going to be given to you. So that is where it started me. And then, because I wanted to play baseball.
Really?
I was a left-handed hitting catcher, and I hit about 325. I was about that average, and I could throw you out from my knees.
Now, wait a minute. I was a catcher.
Yeah.
I didn't hit 325. I hit 305.
Yeah. Still, that's good, though.
But no one ever stole on me.
Yeah, oh, that's right. That's right. Yeah. Uh-huh. Well, it's just funny. I had some, when I was a sophomore, the guy in front of me before I started playing was a senior, and he used to always tell me, he said, once in a while, Austin, you have to hit one of them. He said, if he's going to take off on you, once you get a reputation that they know you might hit him, then that extra second give you enough time to throw him out.
Right.
Wow. So I kind of went along that theory, but I love the game baseball. Wow. I mean, I really thought that was going. My father played in the Negro Leagues with Homestead Grays.
Wow.
And he couldn't, because what my father, how he explained it to me, he said, son, your oldest brother had come, and then all of a sudden you came right behind him, a year or two behind him. He said, I was not making enough money to support my family.
Right.
So he said, I had to give it up.
Yeah.
And get a job, and so I could support my family. And that's kind of how it was. But I used to listen to all the stories about, you know, how they had to eat in the back. And,
right,
you
sure.
Know, it was just
Larry Doby,
Larry
Jackie
Doby,
Robinson,
right.
You know,
mean,
Satchel Paige.
Oh, he used to tell me about some of the great players. Josh Gibson.
Oh, man.
My father thought he was the best he's ever seen.
Yep, yep. So who all recruited you coming out of Mackin? Which schools?
Pretty much all of them, because like at the end, UCLA and all those came in at the end. But the two that I won, my family's from North Carolina, Wilson, North Carolina, and my mother and father, then we moved to D.C. So my father wanted me to go to Notre Dame, and my rest of my family wanted me to go to North Carolina.
And that was Dean Smith?
That was Dean Smith. So the night that I signed at Notre Dame, I had dinner with Dean Smith.
Wow.
And he never let me forget that.
I bet not.
He didn't lose too many. No, he didn't. Uh-huh. He didn't. He told me, he said, A.C., you should have been in North Carolina. You should have been a Tar Heel. I said, yeah, I know, Coach, but I had to do it. My father wanted.
Right.
That was it.
what made it Coach Digger Phelps, right? Digger
no, was your, Johnny D.
Oh, Johnny D was your coach.
Johnny
okay,
D was
and then
the
Digger
coach.
Was after
then
that.
Then Digger was after
I'm sorry.
That.
Yeah. So what made his program so good?
Well, it's just Gene Sullivan was his assistant coach, and he was more of the brains of the operation, because Johnny D was a promoter. He was more like a guy that, you know, he is like, once we got a team, we had about 11 high school All-Americans on the team, then he just went out and just started promoting the team, and actually Coach Sullivan was the one that was the coach, and boy, he was so good, man, he was good, because if we just could have had, we had enough to get to the Elite Eight, but couldn't get past that because we just didn't have enough talent. When you get to that level, you know how it is. You get up there, you can't have two guys that are average. You got to have, everybody's got to be on that par for you to win. And even though once you get to that par, they still have deficiencies, but they don't have as many deficiencies when they get to that Final Four level.
So what round was it where you scored 61 against?
That was in the first round of my junior year.
Now, there's no three-point line, right?
No three-point line. No 60. Three-point line. So what some of the guys on the team always tease me, well, you shot the ball 44 times. I said, well, look how many I made.
Yeah, right.
I made 25. Right. I said, add that up and tell me, that's 56%.
Yeah, right.
So they're like, whoa. You know, I said, because back then, I told them I came along with Maravich, Murphy, Mount, guys who averaged 30 with the drop of a hat.
Was Earl the Pearl right before you?
It was before me.
Just four or five years before you.
And the guys I played against, it was a little story. I was chasing Pete Maravich for the scoring title.
Okay.
And I was averaging about 38, and he was averaging about 43. And he, for about a 5 or 6 game stretch, he averaged almost 60 points a game.
Oh, my.
I said, well, I guess I will stay second.
Right. He was something.
Oh,
well, you know,
we
brought some props here. So this, viewers, is the Austin Carr Notre Dame signed jersey.
It's
too bad you're not here for our event for Youngstown State basketball. You'd have a chance to bid on this. But we'll have plenty of bidders. And so first guy picked.
Right.
In the 71 draft.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And so when you were picked, what was your first learning moment from Coach Fitch?
Probably, he set me down because he told me, he said, look, because we had a lot of different, as you know, if you know Gary Suter, then we had some characters.
You had some characters.
So he sat me down, he said, look, I'm going to have to I'm not going to use you as an example, but I'm going to have to let them know that I'm going to treat you the same way I'm treating them.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, it's going to be hard for me to control them.
Yeah.
Then I said,
that's how you build a team. Right?
So that's how you build a team. So he said, look, I might be a little tough on you, but I think you can handle that.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what it was. I mean, and we went through that, and all the players used to always – like now, Camping him always teased me. He says, you was a coach's pet. I said, no. He always made me do extra.
Right.
I always did extra. And I never complained because that was, he had already explained it to me.
Yep.
Communication is so important.
Amen.
So
viewers, how many
so
times
important.
Have we talked about communications?
Yep.
I mean, that's transparency and communication and honesty.
Yes.
And know
it
that
goes
they
so
care.
Far.
Right.
It goes so far in a locker room. Locker room is... And that's where I'm starting to notice our coach now with the Cavs, his demeanor in the locker room has just changed the existence of what we are. Because I've never thought that the people we have, they have a different persona about them now.
Mm-hmm.
And they believe. Mm-hmm. And I think that's so important.
Well, you know, I found, and I coached 38 years, but I studied lots of teams. And the very best teams were the ones where the best players were the best guys.
Yes.
And they were unselfish.
Yes.
They were, you know, I remember studying Mr. DeBartolo's teams out at San Francisco 49ers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and Ronnie Lott and Roger Craig and Joe Montana
and
Jerry Rice. They were the best guys. Their work ethic was the hardest.
Mm-hmm.
And if you've got your best guys...
Who
will do that?
Right.
Then the rest are going to come along.
Yes,
you know,
and that's how. Donovan, Mobley, Darius, and I can't say enough about Allen.
Allen, oh yeah.
Oh man,
He looks like
he's the heart,
first class dude.
Yes, you're very much.
Yeah.
He's the heart of the team.
Yeah.
I mean, because
and we missed him last year for a stretch, didn't
right.
we? Yeah.
We have all the perimeter things taken care of, but in that middle, night after night, and he's already won two games for us when he blocked the last shot of the game to win. And I'm like, man, but he's just a rock. He's the kind of guy that you can build on. And the one thing you mentioned, the character of the people is so important.
Yeah.
I mean, and it's tough to be able to take a guy who doesn't understand and mold him over again unless the players in the locker room all do it.
Right. Yep.
Because if he doesn't understand it, because he hasn't been in an environment that will help him understand it, then it takes more than the coach.
Yep.
Because you can preach. It's almost like, I don't want to get too far off the path here. It's almost like school now. You bring kids to school who go home and they are just inundated with stuff that's contrary to what they're learning in school.
Right.
And then they go to school and they get like refreshed. They get, and then they leave school, and then all of a sudden, the more I try and help in those situations, it's so depressing.
Yeah, I hear you.
Hey, teammates, I want to tell you about a project we're working on with Youngstown State University. One of the ways Ellen and I have decided to give back is through the Trestle Institute for Leadership and Teamwork. We've collected a set of successful business and nonprofit leaders to serve as guest servant leaders in partnership with the Sokolov Honors College to teach university students teamwork, leadership, and personal skills. We teach from a foundation built on gratitude, excellence, hope, love, and selflessness. If you're a young person or parent helping to search for a unique college experience, you can learn more at trestleinstitute.ysu.edu or ysu.edu. Links will be provided in the show notes.
You know, the modeling, so many of our guests have talked about what the young person, what their modeling was, what their example was. And it's like, would you get a player on your team? If their modeling and their example wasn't great,
right,
it's hard to get it turned around.
Yep.
You know, we get them at age 18 and
in
college.
Oh,
and
yeah.
22 in NBA. And so to me, one of the secrets to recruiting was to see what they lived for a long time, because it's going to be hard. I always wanted to see how they treated their parents, how they treated their high school teammates. I used to go into the cafeteria at the high school and say to the lady behind the thing, hey, is so-and-so come to lunch? Oh, yeah.
Right.
What kind of guy is he? Oh, he's good. He takes his tray back.
Yes.
You know, he says, thank you, ma'am.
Right.
You know, all that.
Right.
Then I know they've modeled the right things.
Yes, right.
Getting them turned
is tough.
Is a tough one. And that's what this Cavs team looks to me like. Again, I'm a TV watcher and not in the locker room.
Right.
But
you understand.
Then you listen to their post-game press
that's
conferences, you know, and that's what's been impressive to me about the Celtics, too. And we're kind of biased, too, because Coach Mazzulla coached here at Youngstown State.
Exactly.
Or I guess at Fairmont.
Right.
Yeah, with Jared Calhoun.
Right.
But you can just see that the character of the team is strong and that the best players exude that.
Yes.
And that's so critical to building a team.
Yes, it is.
You know,
yes,
it is. I didn't get too worried about X and O brilliance with my coaches. I wanted good people.
Right. Yeah.
Same thing with my players. Now, they had to be able to play. Don't get me wrong.
Right.
But they also had to bring the rest of it with them, or we couldn't have a team.
Yeah, because that festers inside. And before you know it, it separates your team.
Yep.
And you have to have that. I mean, I can sit and talk with you all day.
So now, how do you think now? So you were in the league 11 or 12 years, then you're around the league 30 years.
Right.
You know, has it changed?
Oh, yes.
In what way?
Well, one thing, they allow big people to do more now. When I was playing, if you were 6'8", you're going to play in the paint.
Yep, yep.
You can't play out here.
Yep.
You know, and that changed everything when you got George Gervin, you got McAdoo, you got those kind of guys. All of a sudden, those type of guys can play on the perimeter
right,
now.
Right.
Now, that changes everything, just like with us with Mobley. And by extending Mobley into the perimeter now, he's playing against guys who don't have the foot speed to deal with that.
Mm-hmm.
So now that changes the whole thing because he's always going to have an advantage.
Mm-hmm.
And now when he's coming down the floor, his guy's struggling to stay. Now somebody's got to come help. And what coach has done, he's turned us into a catch-and-shoot team.
Mm-hmm.
And even and the more you see Garland's starting to understand now, it's not about boom, 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 boom. It's about And Golden State. that's how they win. They win. Now they're winning without having the named guys because they have guys who understand the concept.
Yep. Yeah. I remember when we were at Ohio State and Coach Mata was our head coach of the Buckeye basketball.
Yeah.
And he used to always say, you know, I like the catch and shoot, but they got to be able to make them.
Right.
And I'm not going to recruit a guy that can't shoot it.
That can't shoot it.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, and that's how it's becoming now. I always, when I have camps with little kids and I go to camps, I said, learn how to shoot the ball.
Right.
Dribble. Learn how to dribble and shoot and have the willingness to play defense.
Yeah.
You got to be willing to play defend because – You it's not going to be all about this. You got to stop somebody.
Well, and really, when it gets down to the big games, it is defense.
Yeah, that's true.
In football or basketball,
that's true. It makes no difference.
Right.
It is defense.
Right.
You're right. And
so, what do you think the multimedia changed? So you started in the broadcast business,
right?
When it was just
a
couple beat writers covering the team, right?
Right.
And then the broadcast thing. So what do you think that has done? To being able to create team because there's so many voices.
Yes. And well, that's another thing. I mean, you have so many influences now that's coming from all kind of ways. And if your player is not doesn't understand that and he wants that, then that can be a problem, I think. I mean, because I personally, when I played, it was starting to happen, but it wasn't like it is now. It's crazy now because there's so many avenues to where you can get and give information.
Right.
It can be a problem. So I just ignore it. Because I'm old school anyway, so I just kind of like, well, hey, I don't need to deal with that. Well, you got an interview. Well, so what? Catch me between my workout periods, and you can have an interview. Other than that, I'm not going to fool with it. And that is the way a lot of the old pros, that's how I learned from them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because I got to know Oscar Robertson and all those guys real well, and that's how they handle it. So I just, you know. I mean.
But think about trying to build any kind of team, a business.
Oh, yeah, right.
An organization. There's a million voices in everyone's head.
Right, exactly.
In fact, even in the scripture, it talks about there's a fierce battle for your mind. Right?
Right.
And so what advice could you give to someone who's trying to build a team, knowing that the people you're trying to build that team with have got so many voices going on? How do you work through that?
Right. That is tough. The way I look at it is, your message has to be strong enough to counter. You can't do it all,
right?
But to counter some of the noise,
right?
And you have to constantly, as an owner nowadays, you have to constantly be investing in your people.
Yep.
Constantly do it. We do it at the Cavs all the time. I used to say, with the Cavs, people love our company because we train them well. Then they come get them.
Mm-hmm.
And they would just, I'm like, he's gone already? Man, he would be taking executives. All levels would always be constantly, but we would train them well, teach them.
The team.
And then, boom, gone. And then that's Dan Gilbert's way of doing business.
Yep.
You know, and but you have to have that. You gotta train them. You gotta show interest. You can't just take anything for granted. You gotta show interest in them as people. Mm-hmm. You have to show interest in them as people, because that to me is where the disconnect comes. When you start making people numbers, and analytics gets too far involved in your in business, then you have trouble, because people are people, and they have that is what you have to keep.
Yep.
The soul of the person.
That's right. You know, it's interesting. When I coached, knowing that the whole social media thing and all that kind of thing was getting bigger and bigger and bigger, and then we were at an Ohio State where it was crazy. You know, I mean, just I would make sure the media knew, I want you to interview like 10 of my guys. I don't want you to just interview my star.
Right.
And I wanted to see, I said, I don't care if you put it on TV. I want to see them send back the message that we're trying to teach.
Yes, yes.
And see if they're getting that
absorbing
message.
It.
And even, again, even if it's not on the air,
right.
I want them to have to be in front of that microphone
right.
saying what they've learned.
Right.
You know, and but man, I tell you what, it's a challenge. And now one thing, I showed you your Notre Dame jersey. You know, it's too bad, viewers, you're not here at our Youngstown State University fundraiser, but you'd have a chance at an Austin Carr signed Cavs jersey, too. So Youngstown State does it right, man. We get
right.
it done. So speaking of events like this and charitable things and so forth, so I'm an Ohio guy my whole life. I spent 2 years at Syracuse, which we just about beat Syracuse the other day. We had them.
Yes.
But anyway, other than that, Ohio. Okay, and so all those years, 48 years in higher ed, every time I turn around, Austin Carr was at something to help. And how did you learn that at every stage of life, you have a different role to help the team?
Well, it was my parents. It started from there. My mother, God bless her soul, I knew this was going to happen. But, you know, it just, she just told me, she would always preach it to my brothers and I, that, you know, you are no better than anybody else. And the only way you're going to have any type of success in life is you have to give back what has been given you.
Yeah.
And that's kind of how we were raised.
Yep. And we tried to preach that to our players. Like, do you understand how fortunate you are to be playing football at Youngstown State or playing football at Ohio State?
Yes.
Do you know God blessed you with great abilities?
Right.
But you also, someone taught you to work hard.
Right.
Someone taught you how to play this game.
And that is what gets you through all the malaise. That gets you through to where you can get to Youngstown State, Ohio State,
right.
to participate,
yep.
is that.
You're right.
And that's what it's about.
All those people that gave you a chance. And we used to always talk about, if we're going to have a great team, this team's going to have an attitude of gratitude.
Yes.
And that we're fortunate to be here. We're fortunate to have the opportunity to play these great games.
Yes.
And then, and one of the things on our goal sheets, I saw you have my book there, and it's got our
right.
our goal sheets.
Right.
Was, what are you going to do to take the responsibility of making a difference down the road, caring for others, making the places and the people you've been around better? That's our responsibility in life.
Yes.
Is to carry that attitude of gratitude. And that's what I loved about Austin Carr. I'd see you at all those different places and those different. I'm thinking, man,
it's giving back.
But,
I mean,
but that's what it's about. And for you to be here tonight for our Youngstown State Penguins. And I tell you what, our basketball program is rocking. We're rocking and rolling and people dying to get to the games.
Yeah, see that, because when you have a team – like you guys have now, or the Cavs are doing, the people can feel togetherness.
Yep,
they can feel it, and they like those the kind of things that make to me it makes the world go round.
Yep. I mean, you know, until our teams knew, and I learned this like in the early '90s here at Youngstown State, until our teams realized that it was bigger than us,
yes,
bigger than that ring we might win,
yes,
bigger than that adulation we might have, but it was about the joy you could bring others and how you could make a difference for others. And no one in Northeast Ohio has brought more joy than Austin Carr.
Thank
and
you.
Carried himself with more class and given back. And we're just so excited you're here. I'm going to ask one more question here.
Okay.
Because we got to get to this event and raise some money for the Penguins.
Right, exactly.
So give me three guys that you either played with or you saw play the game of basketball who you thought were fabulous team members, and why did you feel that about them? What was it about them? Give me three guys.
Oh, wow. Nate Thurman.
Huh.
One of the best.
Ohio guy, right?
Yes. Well, yes, yep. Ohio guy. One of the best teammates I ever had.
Huh.
Very.
What was it that made him a great teammate?
His just willingness to include and willingness to help you take the next step. Not think about himself, but help you.
And he enjoyed it.
And he, right.
You know, some people try to pretend.
Yeah, right. And those are the worst people in the world.
Right. All right, Nate Thurman. That's a good
Nate
one, man.
Thurman.
That's
Dave Bing.
Dave Bing.
Now, I grew up.
Detroit.
Yes.
Syracuse.
I grew up with Dave Bing and watching him play.
Yep.
I used to watch him through the fences when they used to play.
Was he from D.C.?
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And he always kind of took me under his wing and kind of helped me along when I first got into pros and all that. And he was a caring person, a giving person.
Yep.
And he was just a man. And then when I think of the third person, it would probably be my academic advisor at Notre Dame.
Wow.
Dr. DeChicco. Yeah. He saved me a lot of times from just myself.
Yep.
And he ended up being a world-renowned fencing coach.
Huh.
You know, but many days I would sit at his house and him and his wife would, it just brings back sort of memories that I feel full of it, you know?
Yep.
I mean, it's just very important piece of my life. And they taught me so much about life and about being myself, and they were very close with my parents. So it was just like high school, basically, because my parents would always be with them. Whenever something, I would go, if I missed a class, my parents knew about it before I did.
Mm-hmm.
And the worst thing, just like high school, don't tell my parents.
Yeah, right? Well, you know, it's funny, you mentioned Notre Dame. So on September 20th, I think it was.
Right.
I was sitting in the athletic director's box at the Notre Dame-Miami of Ohio game.
Yes.
And I had my 9-year-old grandson.
Okay.
And Marcus Freeman is the head coach, and he played for us at Ohio State.
Right.
And so we were lucky enough to be at the game, and my grandson got to bring his buddy.
Okay.
So he was like the big dog.
Yeah.
And so I see you standing out at the corner of the top of the stadium.
Yes.
And I said to my grandson, I said, that's Austin Carr. And I tried to tell him about it because my grandson thinks he's a hooper.
Okay.
He lives in Indiana. Everyone's a hooper.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I'm telling him all about, and then all of a sudden you're waving to the crowd. And then we look out on the Jumbotron.
Yeah, yes.
And they're talking about all your accolades. And that was the largest ovation that whole day.
Oh, thank you.
Bigger than any touchdown, bigger than the final score. And then all of a sudden, after you were done waving and this and that, and I'm talking to my grandson, and I look back and you're gone.
Yeah.
And I wanted to prove to my grandson I knew you.
Yeah.
But you were gone. So I'm going to make him watch this podcast.
Okay. Standing out on that little ledge they put you out there on, I was happy to get away from there.
Okay. It was up there.
It was up there. It was like, it was a lot colder up there than it was down on that field.
Yep. No, that was something. But, you know, viewers, teammates, you're hearing the same things from so many of the great guests that we've been having, the caring and giving. And, you know, many of you might not have ever heard of Mr. DeChico, was it?
Right.
Or maybe you're not old enough to remember Dave Bing or Nate Thurman.
Nate Thurman, right.
You know, but that's not what it's about. It's about the impression that you leave on others to help build teams.
That's what it is.
And so with that, AC, I can't thank you enough.
Coach,
we didn't even get a chance to have a – oh, I didn't get to point out the bobbleheads. That's about the height differential, just so you guys know. I'm not quite as tall as AC, but we both did get a bobblehead. That's our claim to fame, right?
Yes.
But until next time, be blessed. It's all about the team.
It's all about the team. That's
thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Righty.